This podcast is brought to you by Luca Mele, front-end architecture, team leadership, and technical consulting. Over 16 years of experience turning complex challenges into simple, effective solutions. Learn more at lucamele.ch.
I want you to picture something really quick. You're sitting at your desk, you open up your terminal, and you navigate to the directory of whatever JavaScript project you're working on right now.
Okay, setting the scene.
Yeah, exactly. So vividly imagine typing this specific command, LL's Nodey modules, and then you pipe that to WC-L and you just hit enter.
Oh man, I could already feel my stomach dropping.
Right, because for those who maybe don't run that command every day, L's lists everything in your package folder, and then piping it to WCL basically counts every single line.
It tallies up all the files and folders.
Exactly. Everything yeah. hidden inside your project's dependency tree. You just sit there and watch the screen, and what comes back is usually this massive towering number, like thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of files.
Yeah, it is a completely universal feeling for modern developers.
Yeah.
You look at that folder, which is, you know, routinely hundreds of megabytes in size, and you just have to ask yourself, what did I just invite into my application?
What is actually in there? And if seeing that number makes you deeply uncomfortable, I promise you, you are definitely not alone. Which brings us to our mission for today's deep dive.
We are getting into some really fascinating territory today.
We really are. We're exploring an eye-opening article by Luca Mele. He's a front-end developer and tech lead who's architected systems for major enterprise heavyweights. We're talking AXA, Migros, Vontobel, UBS.
Some very serious high-stakes environments.
Right. And his central premise, well, it's going to challenge a lot of default habits.
Right.
He argues, quite bluntly actually, that every single package you install via NPM is a liability.
Which sounds, you know, it sounds like a very severe stance at first glance, almost anti-open source.
A little bit, yeah.
But it's grounded in a lot of hard-won enterprise-level experience. I mean, we've built this entire culture where running NPM install is just the default solution to any minor inconvenience.
Okay, let's unpack this, because reading through his arguments, I kept thinking of an analogy. Imagine you're packing for a massive multi-month backpacking trip up a mountain.
Okay, I'm with you.
But instead of carefully selecting your own gear, you leave your backpack completely unzipped on a busy city street, and you just invite strangers to drop whatever tools they think you might need inside.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
But to make it perfectly accurate to the JavaScript ecosystem, we have to talk about transitive dependencies.
Oh, right. How does that change the backpack analogy?
Well, imagine a stranger drops a perfectly useful tool into your bag, like a camping stove.
Seems helpful.
Sure. But inside that camping stove is a smaller backpack, packed by a completely different stranger. And inside that nested backpack is another tool, packed by someone else entirely.
So it just keeps going.
Exactly. You might only explicitly invite 10 strangers to put items in your bag, but because their items contain sub-items,
you end up carrying the gear of 400 different people up the mountain.
Exactly. And you have to carry all that weight.
That is a terrifying visual. You don't know what's in the nested bags. You don't know who packed them. And it's so easy to ignore because that node modules folder just sits there, hidden away.
Yeah. And it doesn't even always show up when you run bundle size analyzers.
Wait, really? Why not?
Because a lot of those tools, they only measure the final compiled code that you're shipping to the user's browser. They don't measure the developer environment bloat.
Ah, I see. But Mele points out we are paying an actual tangible price for this bloat, right? Starting with the biggest one, security.
Security is absolutely the most alarming hidden cost. Every package you install drastically increases your security surface area. It's code you didn't write, and let's be honest, code you do not have the time to read or audit.
You just blindly trust it.
Right. And we are talking about severe supply chain risks here. Mele explicitly points to incidents that fundamentally shook the industry. Things like the Event Stream hijack or the Colors.js sabotage.
Let's break those down, because nobody intends to install malware. How does a wildly popular trusted package suddenly become a vector for a supply chain attack?
It usually comes down to the human element, specifically maintainer burnout. Take Event Stream, for example. Oh. This was a highly utilized, totally legitimate utility package. But it was maintained by a single developer working entirely for free in their spare time.
Which is the reality for so much of open source.
Exactly. And when that developer got burned out and wanted to step away, another developer volunteered to take over the project.
Which on paper sounds like a huge win for the community, someone stepping up to help out.
It completely looks like standard community collaboration. So the original maintainer handed over the publishing rights. But the new volunteer was actually a malicious actor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Once they had control, they injected a highly targeted payload into one of those nested subdependencies we talked about. It was designed specifically to steal cryptocurrency wallets from developers working on a particular app.
That is wild. And millions of people just downloaded this malicious update automatically, right?
Yep, because their systems were set to implicitly trust the package.
Because it was hidden in one of those nested backpacks? Mm. Man. And what about colors.js? Because that was a completely different mechanism, wasn't it?
Completely different. The event stream attack was very stealthy. Colors.js was a loud, chaotic protest.
What happened there?
The creator of the package intentionally sabotaged his own code. He introduced an infinite loop that just printed gibberish to the terminal.
Wait, his own code? Why?
He was frustrated. Oh, absolutely. Keeping these packages updated is a nightmare. Packages update, frameworks evolve, and those updates frequently break things.
Tell me about it.
The more packages you rely on, the more time your engineering team is forced to spend just keeping the application's heart beating instead of, you know, actually building new features.
Mila mentions he's seen teams waste entire sprint cycles, like weeks of dedicated engineering time, just clearing out dependabot alerts.
Yes. And dealing with a wall of dependabot alerts is soul-crushing.
For those who haven't had the pleasure, dependabot is that automated tool that scans your repo and flags outdated packages. It opens up automated pull requests.
Right, and you merge and update for some minor utility package, and suddenly your entire test suite fails because the new version drops support for your specific node environment.
It totally drains morale, which leads directly to the third hidden cost he talks about, cognitive overhead.
This is a point people miss a lot.
I found it really compelling, because we often think of utility libraries as saving us mental energy, right? They provide shortcuts. So how does that actually increase cognitive load?
Think about the onboarding process for a new developer. Let's say you install a quote-unquote helpful utility library just because you need one specific tool to format a string.
Sure, happens all the time.
But that library comes bundled with 200 different custom functions. Now a new developer joins your team. They don't just have to learn your core business logic. They have to learn this entirely arbitrary set of abstractions you've introduced.
Right, so that's 200 non-standard ways of doing things they have to navigate.
Exactly. Rather than just reading native standard JavaScript, you're forcing them to learn a dialect instead of the native language.
That makes total sense. And the final cost Mele outlines is the sheer impact on build times. He shares this fantastic real-world example from his time at Migros, the Swiss retail giant.
Oh yeah, the monorepo example.
Yeah. They were running a monorepo, a single repo holding code for multiple applications using PNPM for two of their brands, Bike World and Mikasa. What happens when an enterprise monorepo gets bloated like that?
Everything just grinds to a halt. The continuous integration pipeline, the CI pipeline, becomes incredibly sluggish.
Because it has to download everything from scratch every time, right?
Yes. Every time a developer submits new code, the CI server spins up a fresh environment. If your dependency tree is a gigabyte in size, the server is sitting there downloading and extracting a gigabyte of tiny files before it can even run the first test.
That is brutal.
It is. And when Mele's team finally audited their tree and stripped out the unnecessary packages, their CI pipeline got significantly faster.
Which adds up.
Huge time savings. When you shave 5 minutes off a build and you have 20 developers running the build five times a day, the compounding interest on that save time is massive.
Okay, I understand the risks. The security surface area, the maintenance nightmare, the slow pipelines. But I have to push back here, because this flies in the face of what developers are taught from day one.
You're talking about DRY.
Yes. Don't repeat yourself. In any bootcamp, code reuse is treated as the holy grail. If someone else has already solved a problem and published a package, aren't we just reinventing the wheel and wasting company time by writing it ourselves?
That is the exact counterargument everyone reaches for. And it's precisely why Mele's philosophy is so critical to grasp. He argues that premature abstraction, trying to make everything perfectly reusable too early, actually kills more code bases than a little bit of duplication ever will.
Wait, so he's actively advocating for a little bit of duplication.
He advocates for ownership. His rule of thumb is remarkably practical. If you can write the utility yourself in 20 to 50 lines of code, you probably should just write it.
Because then it's yours.
Exactly. A small utility function that lives inside your code base has zero transitive dependencies. It does exactly what you need it to do. If there's a bug, You step through the code and fix it in 5 minutes.
Instead of opening a GitHub issue and waiting 6 months for a stranger to patch it.
Exactly. There's a competing principle to DRY called YayYay. You aren't going to need it. Mela believes YAGI often beats DRY when it comes to long-term maintainability.
Okay, if we agree that owning small chunks of code is better than outsourcing them, we still have to acknowledge we can't write everything. We need some sort of filtering mechanism.
We do, and Mela uses a very rigorous 3-question checklist with his teams. It acts as a gatekeeper before anyone types npm install.
I love this. So question one flows right out of what we just discussed. Can we write this ourselves in under 50 lines?
Right, and if the answer is yes, the conversation ends. You write it, but if the problem is genuinely complex, you move to question two. Is this package actively maintained?
But how do you actually measure active maintenance? Because a lot of packages look super popular, millions of weekly downloads, but those are just automated CI servers fetching old code, right?
Exactly. You have to put on your investigator hat, go to the GitHub repository, look at the date of the last commit. Has it been silent for 2 years? Look at the open issues.
Are there hundreds of people screaming about a bug that hasn't been acknowledged?
Yes. And crucially, you evaluate the bus factor.
The bus factor is such a morbid but vital concept. It basically asks, how many key developers need to get hit by a bus or, you know, quit programming and move to a farm before a project is doomed?
It is the ultimate measure of organizational risk. Mela states that an 8-month dormant package with only one maintainer isn't just a piece of code, it's a ticking time bomb.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's like treating dependencies exactly like hiring an employee. You wouldn't hire someone without checking if they actually show up to work.
That's a great way to look at it. If the bus factor is 1, you should be extremely hesitant to integrate that package into a production system.
Okay, so let's assume a package passes the first 2 tests. It's too complex to write in 50 lines, and it's maintained by a healthy team. What's the final gatekeeper question?
Question 3 looks at the hidden cargo. What is the transitive dependency count? Mela advises his teams to install a candidate package in an isolated environment first and just run an audit.
To see what it drags in.
Yes. He notes he has frequently seen supposedly simple packages secretly pull in 40 or more other packages.
40 dependencies for one tool. That's 40 nested backpacks.
Yep. And your risk multiplier just exploded. That's 40 more packages that can introduce a breaking change, 40 more packages that can get hijacked, 40 more packages dragging down your build times.
So if a tool requires 40 dependencies just to format a date string, it fails the gatekeeper test.
Hard fail.
Armed with the strict hiring criteria, it feels like we need to take a hard look at the current code base. The reality is, a lot of the incredibly famous packages that developers install by pure muscle memory simply no longer deserve their jobs.
Oh, they really don't. The native tools built right into JavaScript and modern browsers have caught up in a massive way over the last 5 years.
Mela provides a sort of hit list of packages that are prime candidates for eviction. Let's go through them. First up on the chopping block is the undisputed heavyweight champion, Lodash.
Oh, Lodash.
For years, you couldn't find a code base that didn't have it. Why do developers still reach for it, and why is it obsolete?
Context is key here. 10 years ago, JavaScript was wildly inconsistent across browsers. A function that worked in Chrome might just crash Internet Explorer.
Oh, the IE days. Nightmare.
Lodash provided a reliable standardized wrapper for arrays and objects. But today, the JavaScript language itself has evolved drastically. Modern engines run native methods in highly optimized C++ code at lightning speed.
So by installing Lodash today, you're forcing the browser to download a massive library just to do something it already knows how to do natively.
Exactly. It's a massive performance penalty. Instead of pulling in Lodash, you use native methods like array.flat or array.flatmap. If you need to deet copy an object, we now have structured clone built right in.
One of the most common uses for Lodash was that get function, right? To safely dig into nested objects without the app crashing.
Right, and that has been completely superseded by native optional chaining. Just use a question mark, it handles it gracefully.
That's huge.
Mela advises that if you have a genuinely complex mathematical use case where you desperately need a specific Lodash function, like a debounce utility, only import that exact specific file. Never the entire library.
Next on the eviction list is moment.js. This was the absolute gold standard for handling dates and times, and dates drive developers insane.
True, but moment.js is officially in maintenance mode. The creators themselves published a statement saying, "We're done adding new features. Don't use this for new projects."
Really? I didn't know they officially said that.
Yeah. It relies on outdated architectural patterns that add a massive 300 kilobytes to your bundle size.
300 kilobytes just for dates?
Yeah. And for a user on a slow mobile connection, parsing 300 kilobytes of JavaScript just to display a date blocks the main thread and makes the page completely unresponsive.
So what's the modern replacement?
For basic formatting, rely on the native NPL date time format API. It leverages the operating system's localized time knowledge. If you absolutely require a library, Mailus suggests modern alternatives like DateFNs.
Why is DateFNs better than Moment?
Because it supports tree shaking.
Remind us how that works.
Tree shaking is a process where your bundler analyzes your code, figures out exactly which functions you actually used, and essentially prunes the dead branches off the tree. With Moment, you ship the entire massive library. With DateFNs, you only ship the 5 kilobytes you actually invoked.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, let's look at Axios. This feels like the default install for making HTTP requests.
Axios gained popularity because the old native way XML HTTP request was incredibly clunky. Axios gave us a clean, promise-based API.
But web standards caught up.
Exactly. The native fetch API is just as clean, and crucially, it's available natively everywhere now. Not just in browsers, but natively in Node.js version 18 and up. You just don't need an external wrapper anymore.
What about generating unique IDs? The UID package gets tens of millions of downloads every week.
Another legacy habit. If you need a unique identifier, modern runtimes have the Web Crypto API built right in. You just call crypto.randomUAID. It's cryptographically secure natively, runs faster, and requires zero dependencies.
Wow. Okay, what about CSS utilities? Mail mentions packages like classnames or CSSX, which are everywhere in React projects.
If a team is using Tailwind CSS, they likely already have a utility function set up, or, honestly, you can write a template literal function using native JavaScript to join those strings yourself in about 3 lines of code.
Looking at this hit list, it is clear developers are just battling muscle memory. We tape npm install Lodash because it saved us in 2016. But if we are aggressively firing all these legacy libraries, are we expected to build literally everything from absolute scratch?
Absolutely not. And Mel is very careful to define the boundaries here. There are specific, highly specialized domains where rolling your own code is actually the bigger liability.
Okay, good. Because writing everything sounds exhausting.
Right. Writing a 20-line string utility is smart. Trying to write a 20-line encryption algorithm is catastrophic. There is a VIP list of packages that absolutely earn their keep.
Where do we draw that line? When do we trust a package over our own code?
The first and most critical domain is cryptography. Never, ever roll your own crypto. It is a wildly complex field driven by advanced mathematics.
And the stakes are literally company-ending if you get it wrong.
Exactly. The difference between a secure algorithm and one with a massive vulnerability often comes down to mathematical edge cases that only dedicated security researchers understand. You must rely on heavily audited open-source libraries for anything related to hashing or encryption.
What's the next exception on the VIP list?
Complex parsing. We're talking about domains where the hidden rules will, as Melly puts it, eat you alive. A perfect example is time zone aware date parsing.
Oh, time zones. Nobody wants to write a time zone parser.
Because it isn't just math, it's politics. Countries change their daylight saving rules arbitrarily. Borders move. Leap seconds get added. Parsing a time zone requires a massive database of historical oddities.
It's a nightmare.
Same applies to parsing malformed CSV files or rendering complex markdown into HTML. These problems look simple, but have thousands of bizarre edge cases. You delegate those to the community.
That distinction clarifies things immensely. What about the actual framework tools we use?
Framework integrations are the third exception. If you're building within Next.js, React, or Vue, lean into their official ecosystem packages.
Like the NextImage component.
Yes. It handles on-the-fly image optimization, responsive sizing across devices, and prevents layout shifts. Replicating that with custom code would take months.
The source material provides a great case study of putting this balance into practice. Mele talks about his time at Vontobel. They built a highly complex financial platform dealing with real-time WebSocket pricing, high stakes, fast data.
And their approach perfectly illustrates this philosophy. You might assume they installed hundreds of libraries to speed up development, but they kept their dependency count incredibly lean.
They kept React and Next.js, right?
Yeah, because those frameworks solve the hard structural problems. They kept specialized financial formatting libraries because financial compliance and rounding edge cases are brutal.
But they stopped there.
They stopped there. Everything else, basic utilities, state management, network requests they wrote themselves, or used native browser APIs, they proved you can build enterprise-grade software without a bloated node modules folder.
So what does this all mean? Summarizing Mele's philosophy, the dividing line is edge cases. If a problem requires a mathematical genius or handling thousands of tiny, maddening geopolitical edge cases like time zones, you delegate it. You hire the expert package.
But if it just saves you 15 minutes of typing out a string manipulation utility, you write it yourself. Take ownership.
Bringing this back to you, the listener, what is the ultimate payoff for adopting this native-first mindset? It goes beyond just feeling good about clean code.
Oh, completely.
A code base with fewer dependencies is fundamentally faster to build in your CI pipelines, which saves money. It's drastically easier for your security team to audit. And most importantly, it protects your future self.
That is the real value. You will not be that stressed out developer waking up at 2 a.m. to debug a catastrophic production crash, only to discover it was caused by a transitive dependency 5 levels deep that you didn't even know existed.
But getting there isn't just a one-off weekend cleanup project, is it?
No. Mele emphasizes this has to become a permanent team habit. He strongly recommends a quarterly dependency audit. Every 3 months, sit down with your team, look at your package.json, and ruthlessly evaluate it.
Just ask, do we still actually need this?
Exactly. Has a native JavaScript API released an update that replaces this? You have to make pruning the tree part of your engineering culture.
Taking the time to empty out the backpack, look at every tool, and take out the heavy, outdated gear, it really shifts how you view the entire NPM ecosystem.
It does.
And, you know, if we step back and connect this hyper-technical strategy to the broader software industry, it raises a really profound and slightly uncomfortable question about how we operate.
Oh, something for the listener to mull over.
Yeah. If the entire software industry adopted this native-first, minimal-dependency mindset tomorrow, how would it change the culture of open source?
How do you mean?
Think about what we currently reward. Have we, as a developer community, accidentally gamified open source?
Oh, wow.
Right. By obsessively celebrating millions of weekly downloads and thousands of GitHub stars, have we inadvertently rewarded the creation of tiny, unnecessary micropackages just so developers can point to metrics on a resume?
Are we building dependencies for utility or for clout?
Exactly. It is something to seriously think about the next time you open your terminal, prepare to type npm install, and invite another stranger into your code base.
A heavy question regarding how we build the tools that built the web. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep building, keep questioning the defaults, and maybe take a few minutes today to check what's really hiding inside your node modules folder.